All right, welcome everybody to the 25th episode of Strength Academy Podcast. We have a special guest for you, but first of all, this is Mundo, and once again, I'm joined by Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
And so, Grayson, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest?
All right, well, our special guest today is Dee McGilvery. Dee and I have known each other since November of 2011, I believe. We were both starting out CrossFit at about the same time, and I believe you were still playing USA rugby. So Dee's played three USA sports, competed nationally for rugby, handball, and weightlifting. Am I leaving anything out?
Well, there's two different kinds of rugby. So sevens Olympic team and then 15s USA World Cup team.
All right. I left a little bit out.
It's okay. Yeah.
So yeah, you've kind of been well versed in almost every kind of field of athletics for how long is your? I mean, you're still going strong. When did you start your rugby career? That was the first up, right?
So basically, I was playing soccer at Highland University, and I was fourth string goalie for Division II school. So you can tell that like I wasn't getting any play in. And there were a bunch of girls just kicking a ball through a post, and they asked me to come over there and try kicking it since I was a soccer player. And everywhere they put it on a tee, I'd just make it through. And then they had a competition in Albuquerque, and I was playing soccer still for like a club team, and they were playing on a couple fields over from us by Bullhead Park, and I went over to say hello to them, and they threw a jersey in my face, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll rock this on the sideline, and they were like, get on the field. And I'm like, no, that's cool, I'll just wear this over here. And they literally picked me up and put me on the field, gave me three rules, and just let me go. And like from then, I got kind of hooked with the sport of rugby. So that's where that started. And then when I met Grayson, I was playing rugby. I think I was only on the USA team for like 3 years at that point. And they'd give us like 4 hours of training to do a day, and I was getting burned out. And one of the USA players was going to the gym that Grayson and I were before Grayson was there, but... And I asked her, how are you in better shape than anybody else? And that's when she's telling me about CrossFit, and it was only an hour a day, and that's how I jumped on that bandwagon. And, about 6 months later is when, Grayson joined the gym, and him and I have known each other since, so.
I remember our first workout, we got partnered up in some sort of partner workout that involved weighted push-ups, and they paired us up, and I remember putting a 45-pound weight on your back and you just repping out like 15 perfect push-ups super fast. And I was like, who is this person? This is incredible. That was one of the things that I was like, okay, I found a thing that that'll make you really strong. This is gonna be a good thing overall. So that's kind of your start in rugby. So how did you then move to let's kind of go through the timeline. So there's rugby, and then the next up was some CrossFit, but handball was the next in the
run,
right?
So that was a complete accident, because apparently I'm the kind of person who can't make decisions for myself. So like when somebody says, hey, you'd be good at this, go try it, this is what happened with rugby. And then with handball, I actually went, when I was teaching at Highland High School, to go to a USA training camp. And my principal sent me there. He was like, yeah, go for it, because the problem was in our department, everybody was teaching handball, team handball, like basketball, but throwing it past a goalie. So when I went to learn, the coach, when I emailed him, hey, is there any learning opportunities? What can I do? And he goes, oh, yeah, we've got a USA camp. Come on down. Bring some tennis shoes. You can come play with the girls. And I was just like, all right, cool. Sounds fun. So I flew down there, rented a car. Some of the girls housed me, which was pretty cool. And it was like a 3-day weekend of just like a camp of nearby college girls training with the USA team. And by the end of the weekend, the head coach was like, oh, do you have any questions for me? I'm like, oh, no, but if I think of any, is this an okay email contact? I was like, do you have any questions? And he's like, yeah, you want to be on the Olympic handball team? And I thought it was a joke. And in handball, you're allowed to wrap your arms around people and stop them from moving. And apparently for a lot of the handball girls, they didn't really want to make that kind of contact or didn't know how. And like from rugby, that came really naturally to me, to just grab people in the air.
Yeah.
And at first, it would be accidental because I'd hit people hard onto the court, and that's illegal, but you can like hit them as long as they don't fall onto the court. So I'd like catch people and they would on purpose like try to hit the court so that they'd get a penalty, kind of like how you see soccer players and after like 3 or 4 times hitting people to the court, learning they're just gonna fall, that I would just hold them up in the air and like pretty much squeeze them till they couldn't breathe, because I didn't want them to hit the court and get more penalties against me. And I guess that was the determining factor of like, we want you on the USA handball team. And I probably spent the first 2 months learning how to throw a ball, because rugby's all underhand and handball is overhand, and I have no overhand skills. So,
well, it worked out pretty well for you, considering that you were on the team.
Yeah, they just picked me up, and then I think that was like February of that year, and then by March they paid for me to go play against Puerto Rico, and I got my first cap there. And then I moved out there several months later, but I only lasted about 4 months, because when I found out we weren't going to qualify for the Olympics, which was the only real reason I wanted to go, not because I loved the sport, but it was like, oh, an Olympic opportunity, that's what I've always wanted since I was 10. We didn't even qualify for Pan Ams, and you kind of needed to do so well in Pan Ams to go to the Olympics. I was just like, cool, I'm going home, peace out, I don't love this. So it was a fun opportunity, though.
And that's kind of when we linked back up, because you had been kind of gone for that, you know, little bit of time, and we hung out doing CrossFit Wads together or doing some weightlifting. But when you came back from that, that's when I started programming for you, and that's when we started working on weightlifting, right?
Yeah, so after that, when I came home, I couldn't really do a lot of CrossFit stuff because I was dealing from a broken foot injury and an internal bleeding injury when I was away from handball. So when I came home, I was pretty miserable too, and I couldn't really like jump or run. And so I just was like, well, you know, you've always been really strong at the barbell movement, so let's just focus on Olympic weightlifting. Again, not making a decision for myself, just somebody being like, you'd be really good at this, and I'm like, okay. So that's when Grayson was kind of getting his foot into really programming on his own and learning what it's like to program and learning what it's like to have athletes of his own that is not CrossFit. For, you know, he was kind of getting his own niche in Olympic weightlifting at the time.
Yeah, it was definitely, you got to kind of be a part of all the early trial and error days, where it was, you know, okay, there's all these different theories about programming, and there's all these different people saying moderately different things about exercise selection and volume and intensity, and we really kind of just guinea pigged on ourselves for the first year or so of that training.
As far as I remember, I think you would like throw me on a program for 10 to 12 weeks, and then if it was really successful, you would put yourself and Tyler on it for like 10 to 12 weeks, and if it was really successful, then you gave it to everybody else that was in the Olympic lifting club. And it was just kind of funny to be like, okay, 6 weeks in, this is horrible. Niche that. Okay, how do we make up time? And okay, I guess all three of us are trying a program because we lost 6 weeks of time. And okay, that was successful. Now we can give it to everybody else. Right. So it was kind of like a 3-step trial run of like putting me through it. It sucked, but it was really successful. And then Grayson and Tyler went through it. It sucked, but it was really successful. Now everybody else gets to go through it. And like, it was kind of like, if you put me on one program, I'd be ahead of 2 cycles of everybody else until all three of us got synchronized. Right. So,
yeah, no, it was definitely a lot of fun just kind of playing with, and that was where, you know, we realized pretty early on that you're a volume responder. So you do very well squatting for high reps in your off-season training.
Yeah.
What's your best set of 10?
I did 305 a long time ago, but it wasn't like really, like my depth wasn't great then. So then about a year ago we redid it, and I got up to 300 for full depth for 10, and 300 pounds, so like was that 136 kilos.
Yeah, roughly.
So but 300 sounds way more impressive than 136 kilos, let's be real. For all you listeners who are can't do conversions, that's okay. But I do feel my best and my strongest. Granted, my one rep max doesn't really go up from it, but the fact that my endurance is a lot better, I recover a lot faster. In fact, if you give me like 3 minutes or more rest, I start to panic because I feel like it's too much time and I get cold really quick. So, but I think we learned that I responded well to high volume when I kicked into Grid League.
Yeah, and so let's talk about that.
I was going to ask about the Grid League. Texas Bloodhounds, right?
So initially it was Texas Bloodhounds. So we had this guy again at the CrossFit gym, Dylan, and he was trying out for a professional grid league, and they had a combine, and to fundraise himself, the gym had a grid event where he split some people up into teams, and we did like maybe four or five little races in a match.
That was legitimately some of the most fun that I've had. That was a very good time.
So fun. And it was really cool because I guess you had all these CrossFitters, but we had people who weren't good at gymnastics movements and people who weren't really strong enough for barbell. It was really cool to watch us like collaborate to get something done instead of being like, I can only get one chest to bar pull up in and you're going to have to do the other nine. It was just like, no, you knock out all 10. I'll go over here and wait for that barbell, you know?
Yeah.
And again, I can't make a decision for myself. Hey, D, after these races, you did really, really good at this. Why don't you pursue grid league? And so the next year, there was an amateur competition. And, you know, Dylan picked me up right away because he had a bunch of friends in Texas that were putting it all together. And I think getting ready for that is when Grayson also started doing more individualized stuff, like realizing I'm not just going to program for everybody. This person has specific needs. And I think that's where he started getting his niche of, like, learning how to individualize instead of using full group.
Training, having to program for grid was
insane.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was an interesting problem because it needed to facilitate the high repetition work and the short rest. So essentially everything became sprinting sets. So, you know, doing sets of 10 in the push press with 30 seconds rest between sets for four rounds. Or, you know, pretty much everything was on a clock and timed. Yeah. Or, you know, clean and jerk every 15 seconds for 5 minutes. Really short burst kind of stuff. Yeah. It really made us get a little creative with just like, okay, how do we, you know, kind of, what's the specificity look like? What do we need to be doing in training to mimic what's going to be happening on, you know, the grid? So it would be, you know, finish this, rest 5 minutes, go straight into this next thing.
And then learning how to build up to a prescribed intensity, because if you thought like CrossFit RX weights or movements were insane, like imagine what the men have to do, and that's the beginning part for the strength specialist for women. So, you know, if you have 95 pounds for women, 135 pounds for men, for grid league it was like 155 for women and like 250 for men.
Damn.
So it's like, well, if I can't push jerk 175 pounds for 10 reps, how do we build up to that intensity over a certain amount of time? And we had a very specific timeline too, so that made things real interesting of doing things at higher intensity than we had ever trained before.
But what I think that did really well was it kind of inadvertently just built up this huge work capacity that you can do in, you know, your training in the Olympic lifts. Like the you know, when we finished up that season that you played for Miami, the next couple of cycles, like the workload you could handle from being
ridiculous.
Able to do, you know, 10 rep power jerks was pretty ridiculous.
Or like even one of their testers was like a 2 rep max clean and jerk in 20 seconds and you have to start in a prone position. And I remember just finishing that at 100 kilos and submitting it, and I would get so mad because I put on 5 more kilos and I couldn't do it. But even then, if you ask me to do 100 kilos now in 20 seconds, that's not happening.
Yeah.
No way. But the whole next cycle, I was hitting, you know, 90 kilo snatches every week, and I was probably cleaning and jerking anywhere between 110 to 115 every week for like 4 or 5 weeks in a row at the end of a cycle.
So that's kind of how we kind of landed on the style of program that we do for you now, where if we're doing a 12-week preparation, those first 4 weeks involve a lot of high rep stuff, sets of 4 and 5 on the classic lifts, like kind of really building up some conditioning stuff. And it was just kind of interesting as a way of figuring out what kind of ends up working for you. Grid League actually ended up being very helpful for that. And then when they kind of shut it down, because they haven't had a professional season since that one, that's when we kind of went all in and we're really pushing the weightlifting. So what do you think, since you've made that kind of full-time shift and commitment to weightlifting, what do you think like the biggest challenge you've had like in training would be? So like, is it like, it can be, you know, a physical setback you had, or the change in mentality between switching from something that's go, go, go to something that's a little more precise. What do you feel like the biggest challenge switching to weightlifting full-time was?
Probably the biggest challenge is to combine two things. Like, I had a hip injury almost 2 years ago from getting underneath the clean, and it was not noticeable initially, but the fact that I could snatch 80 kilos but not stand up when that's the easiest part for me totally changed my mentality of, like, do I even want to get underneath the bar at this point? And, you know, that threw me in a rock and a loop for almost 2 years, so about a year and a half. And I also think the other part from having that injury is, I mean, if you ask Grayson, for the last 8 years, I hate taking rest days. It is the worst thing for me in the world. I get anxious and I get upset. But after having that injury, like, learning that a rest day is okay. I don't have to do 14 workouts in 1 week. Like, to go from, you know, after that injury too, I went from 6 workouts a week to, you know, now Grayson only programs 4 workouts for me a week. So, like, mentally being okay with, it's okay to rest, and you just have 4 really good days. So, like, to me, that's probably the hardest, is my brain. My brain is what kills me the most with training. Whether I'm like, I don't want to get underneath the bar because it hurt my hip last time. What if that happens again? And I can't be running on the what ifs. And it takes a lot for me to, like, learn to find a breakthrough. And I'm so stubborn about it. Like, I don't want to go talk to somebody about it. I want to figure this out. But I also believe that I'm mentally tough enough to go do that. As frustrating as that could be to everybody else who works with me to watch me throw fits and barbells. And I think at the same time, I also know when I need to be alone. It could be really frustrating because Grayson doesn't get to see me train as much. You don't get to see me train as much. But, like, me having to be alone and figure it out, like, I can watch myself. I can learn from myself. But sometimes, you know, that's not always best for me too. So, like, some of the biggest struggles, again, it's my brain. My brain is my biggest struggle.
I think that goes for most everybody.
A lot of people. So, you've been a professional athlete or participated in athletics at a high level for a long period of time. So, what keeps you coming back? I mean, you've gone from all these different organizations, and then now you're still a weightlifter. And, like, what keeps you coming back? Is it that you still want to compete? Is that what keeps it exciting for you?
I am, ever since I was 10, I've always wanted to be in a World Cup or in the Olympics. And there's a part of me that is still trying to please the 10-year-old me, even though I'm not the same person as I was when I was 10 years old. But at the same time, like, I love being really good at what I'm at. I also love showing other people what I do is good, because I like to inspire them as well. Like, it takes a lot, especially for me as a teacher, to get the kids to buy in what I have to give them or what I have to teach them or show them. And I'm the kind of person who is, I'm going to practice what I preach. And if I have those high expectations of my students, I expect them to have those high expectations of me. And I've always had really high expectations of myself. Like, school wasn't the easiest for me. You know, learning was a struggle. It took me 7 years to get a bachelor's degree full-time, including summer school, and the only thing I knew that I was really good at was anything you could put in my hands. So if I could use that to keep me going, to keep striving forward, and to keep bettering myself, then right now, for me, I hope that also betters my students.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that. Just from the time that I've known you, you know, I've watched you grow as an athlete and as a person, and I don't know, I've been impressed with your work ethic and your ability to move through obstacles, and, you know, that's something that I appreciate, and I hope that your students, and by the way, teacher, Dee is a teacher in her normal job, she brings in some of her students, and they admire her, and I can see that they really do trust what she has to say, and they believe in what she's telling them. So that helps, you know, bring people in, and helps her credibility as both a weightlifter and as a teacher.
Yeah, it's been really cool getting to see kind of what you've been able to do with the weights program over at that high school. So when you took over, it was essentially, who wants to do bench press and leg press today? So talk about kind of how you, you know, are getting these young people interested in the sport, and not just, you know, weightlifting as a sport, but I mean, you're getting them hooked on the basics and then showing them that this is a path that they can pursue. And now we have a handful of your kids that are snatching and coming into the gym and training with us. So like, how did you, kind of decide, like, what do you do to get the kids kind of hooked on, you know, this weightlifting kick?
So the first thing that actually was really, really hard is to be a female weightlifting teacher in a very male dominant kind of idea or world. So when I first started teaching weight training, I had one girl and that was it. And it was all boys. And the boys had a hard time buying into what I had to say. So the first year it was kind of like, okay, this is what you say, but I'm just going to go over here and bench and bicep curl. And it was a huge, huge struggle. But my second year was, you know, when I left for the very first 2 weeks of school to do, you know, Grid League. And when I was gone, my students watched me compete. And after that, I think that totally sold them of being like, oh yeah, she knows what she's talking about. Yeah. I can't lift that. And she's doing it for 10. She's doing it for 15. She's doing it for 20. Oh my God, I can't believe she just picked up that 400 pound. Yeah, I'm going to listen to her. You know, so when I came home and we were watching the last match, the kids were like telling each other the rules. Like a kid would have a question and before I could even answer it, somebody would be like, weren't you paying attention to the intro? It said they had to complete this before going on to the next, you know. Right. And it cracked me up because the kids immediately were like, I can't believe this is my teacher. And since then, just that alone, between my first year and now my fourth year, I went from one female student to 20% of my weight training students are female. So that was good to be like a female role model saying like, this is okay to be in there. So that was the first step of getting them invested. The second step is, I don't want to say I kind of harass my students, but when they show me that they want something done their way, I basically make a program based off of that, make them hate it and do it my way. So for instance, I got kids who want to max out every single day. And all it is again, bench press and like bar muscle ups. And I've got like three kids who do this. I'm like, fine, you want to max out every day, I'll show you how to do it, but it's not fun. And then I throw the Bulgarian method at them, you know? Or I have kids who refuse to squat, just refuse. And they're like, why is my bench press not going up? And I'm like, hey, fun fact, if you squat more, your bench will go up. And they're like, you're a liar. Okay, let's do Texas method. And all of a sudden, not only did they get like 20 pound PRs on their squat, but they also went up 20 pounds on their bench press. And they're like, oh, okay. And then the next cycle, they humor me and start squatting some more. And then they get bored and go back to what they were doing. And then they're like, why?
Yeah.
So the fact that, you know, I get kids to buy in based off of their needs. Again, I'm not trying to torture them or harass them, but I'm like, hey, if you want these goals, you need to trust me for the next 6 weeks. See how it goes, and if you don't like it, throw it out the window. If it worked, then you need to keep following. And I had a kid, you know, 2 years ago, he graduated last year, and he did not want to listen to anything I had to say. And I was like, you know what, if you just try this, just try what I have to give you for 6 weeks. If it doesn't work, throw it out the window. Forget what I have to say. And it worked for 6 weeks, and you know, he got the growth. He was the kind of kid who was benching more than he squats.
Oh,
and I was like, don't be that guy. Don't be that guy, you know. Top so again, kind of harassing him. And it worked for 6 weeks, and then after that he'd go, all right, I'll give you another 6 weeks, but that's it. And then all of a sudden I see him as my strongest kid at the end of 2 years, who was pulling 475 pound deadlift and squatting 355, and he wasn't that guy anymore.
Right.
And all the kids started to admire him. So the fact that some of these kids are buying into it, the ones who don't, they somehow hoax their friends into it. And it's like, come on, dude, like, this is good.
Right.
And, you know, they're trying a lot of different things and probably doing something that I can probably honestly say nobody else is doing in this country for a weight training program.
That's awesome. I want to get into how you structure these things a little bit, because I think it's a really cool and novel way to get kids, you know, not necessarily specifically towards Olympic lifting, but just to get kids a big variety of, you know, different ways that people train. And I think that the way you structure it's kind of cool. So you have 6 week blocks and you kind of rotate styles of programming between them, right?
Yeah. So the weight training class is unfortunately kind of complicated in the sense that I have level one, twos, and threes, and they're not separated. They're all integrated together. So if they're going to have me for 3 years, I don't want it to be boring. So there are six weeks in a year, and what I do is give them five different programs based off of different ideas or methodologies, and the last one they can make it on their own. So usually, like, the first 6 weeks has to do with, like, overload training or adaptation, learning movements. Then there's some sort of strength, volume, intensity, and hypertrophy phases. So those are the five different categories they try to hit a year. And the sixth one, before summer break, based off of whatever goals they want, they get to design their own. So by the time if they do have me for 3 years for weight training, they have 15 different methodologies under their belt. They have three of their own that they attempted to create. And it's really fun to watch them over 3 years because you can see how much better they get over the 3 years. Or yeah. They learn, like, I don't have to just follow a 5-3-1 Wendler. I can use that just for my back squat if I want to. Mm-hmm. And then maybe I really liked the high intensity for my bench press, so I'm going to do a Bulgarian for just my bench press. Like, so they're learning, like, not only is there not one way to do it, but based off of their outcomes or how they did on each cycle, they can mix and match to make their own, which is what programming is. Like, that's what it is. Based off of your goals and your ideas, like, you can learn how to make something based off of what you've already done through trial and error.
Well, and that's something that, you know, is really important for me with what we do at the gym. And, you know, it's this idea that as people get more advanced, it's less, you know, that you're dictating what they have to do, but it's that you're collaborating with them and getting their feedback. Because once you've done something for a long time, you can kind of, if you're reflecting on it, you can kind of know, okay, I tend to thrive in these situations or these sort of things. So, like, when we're setting out for putting a program together for going to nationals, we tend to sit down and kind of talk about, like, okay, well, here's what I think has worked really well. What do you feel like is lagging right now? What do you want to work on? And I think it's really cool that, you know, essentially you're getting these kids, by the time they get out of high school, if they've had you the whole time, to be able to be autonomous and take kind of control of their fitness lifestyle and, you know what they like and pursue that and know that there are, you know, sports involved, that, you know, you can do this kind of rec league weightlifting. I really like that you're kind of instilling that self-motivation into them.
Yeah, because, I mean, I have, my largest class is 42 kids. I can't force 42 kids to do something they don't want.
Right.
They have to, again, buy into it on their own. I can't make them. They have to be self-determined and self-motivated, and usually it takes maybe the first 12 weeks of school to get them into that mode. But if I have kids from previous years in my classes, it's really cool that they take a leadership role and they take their friends underneath their wing, that it's like, oh, I'm a level one. Oh, okay, well, come with me because I'm a level two or a level three and I'm going to help you. And that helps me because, again, my one set of eyes for 42 kids is insane. But the fact I have my level twos, level threes bought into it, and they are taking kids under their wing and helping, and that makes my job easier, and they're doing exactly what I intended. Because how many times did you go to the gym and you didn't know what you were doing and you had a friend who was like, hey, try this. Hey, try this.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing today. Do you want to just do what I'm doing today?
Right.
And that's what gets you started. So imagine by the time these kids leave my class and they go into the real world, I know that they're going to have friends with them who are like, I really want to get into lifting, but I'm scared. And they're like, oh, yeah, I know what's going on. You can just come join me. Because that's how we get into it, you know? And so it's, you know, preparing them for real world. And then the kids that I try to get into our gym, I just see something in them. Like, they're more, they tend to be more driven, more motivated, or have more of an interest in the clean and jerk, or they're better movers at it than their peers. Because, again, trying to teach 42 kids how to do a clean and jerk is, like, the most hardest thing.
Yeah, herding cats.
And if I see kids who are like, I just really want to make this jerk perfect, and I'm like, that tells me they use the word perfect, which means they understand that it's a technique, not a strength thing.
Right.
And those are the kind of kids that I'm like, hey, would you be interested in doing this? Like, it's your off season right now and you're not really doing anything. Or, oh, I kind of realized that after college, you're probably not going to be doing this sport. You even said so yourself. Do you need a hobby?
Right.
You know, because I see a lot of potential in you for this. And, you know, that's kind of the things that I'm using to get my kids into the Olympic weightlifting sport, because they've kind of sparked an interest. And I don't know if they sparked an interest because of them doing it or from seeing me do it, but it's an interest and I want them to pursue those ideas, especially while they're young. Because kind of like how you guys said, oh, I wish I started Olympic weightlifting when I was, you know, and these kids are at the age of 15 to 18 in my class are starting some sort of form of it. So
I think when Grayson and I came up with the name for our gym, the Strength Academy, we kind of had the idea that, you know, we wanted to use the barbell to train people to be tough, both physically and mentally. And I think that part of what you're doing is almost the embodiment of that. You're teaching these kids life skills in the fact that, you know, they learn to do something that's difficult, they learn to be smart about it, and then they also learn that there's more than one way to go about things. And then moving past obstacles, both mentally and physically. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, like, you've had times when you've encountered mental obstacles, and like, how did you get past those? Like, if you had to give somebody advice of your, or just a picture of your own experience about things that you've had to move past, like, how did you get past them? Because I know that in the past couple cycles, there's been a few times where you've hit some bumpy spots and you weren't really happy with how things were moving with yourself, like within your own body and like your mental state. How did you, or maybe you're still working past it, like, how do you do that? Like, how do you come back and put those things through the grinder?
So obviously a part of it is American culture. We are very fixated on the number on the bar and not how the bar is moving. And I do that to myself. There's some times where there's a number on the bar and I'm like, I don't know. So actually Consuelo said something to me after, during the middle of the last cycle where I was like, hey, you were struggling. What got you through it? She said, oh, I went and watched old videos of myself and I just reminded myself that I have done this before. So I went back and I watched old videos of myself and I was like, man, I got under 115 kilos and it was reckless. And I'm like, the pull didn't matter. I just dove underneath the bar. I watched it crash on me. And in my mind, I was like, okay, I can do that again. But what I know now is much more than what I know then. So the idea of you've already done this before, you can do this again, is kind of what ran through my mind. And I have kids sometimes that say, oh my God, this is so heavy. And I kind of teach them, not teach them, but kind of encourage them to lie to themselves.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like the fake it till you become it or fake it till you, you know, make it kind of thing. And some of these kids are doing like 95% of their pulls right now because they're doing Wendler. And they're like, I can't do this. I'm like, you've done this before, right? What do you mean? I'm like, you've done this before. This is less than your max. You have done this before. Mm-hmm. You know, or they're like, oh my God, it's only 5 pounds less than my max. I'm like, no, it's not. It's only 100 pounds. And they're like, no, it's 130. I'm like, no, it's only 100 pounds in the bar. But miss, it's 135. And I'm winking at them. And I'm like, there's only 100 pounds on the bar. And they're like, oh, yeah. There's only 100 pounds in the bar. Or like sometimes I have to trick them and make them walk away. And I'll change the weights in the bar. And it'll be the exact same weight, but it's a different combination. And you know, Grayson used to do this to me a long time ago of like, go look away, I'm going to put weight on the bar, and all you're allowed to do is look at the plates that you can see from the middle of the bar. So you can't see all the little plates on the outside, you know? So, and that kind of teaches them some mental toughness of like, I've done this before. Okay, sometimes I have to lie to myself. And those are things that have worked to me that I've shared with my students, but obviously not everybody works the same way.
Yeah.
But those are the kind of things that I have done for myself that I kind of share with them. And then there are some days where I'm like, okay, I know this is not going to happen. Let's just drop it down by 5 kilos and end on a good rep.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty valuable thing is that, you know, if it's not there that day, banging your head against the wall, trying to force it, you know, it's like we've talked about plenty of times. It comes back to practice. And if the weight on the bar just isn't happening that day, you still have an opportunity to practice with a lighter weight. You're still going to be making improvements on your snatch technique or your clean technique. Like, you know, just being willing to take that step back and just work on getting it perfect. But I think the line, like teaching kids that the attitude with which you approach something shapes how difficult or easy that thing is. And it doesn't always have to be truthful to yourself. You know, you can... You know, if you're going into an interview, I heard somebody talk about this somewhere last week where they were saying, you know, if you're a really socially awkward person and you're having trouble meeting new people or talking to people at a party, you adopt a character for that event where you're like, okay, well, I'm going to act Like, how would James Bond act at this party? Okay, I'm going to be James Bond at this party. And, you know, you create a character of yourself where you're like, I'm going to imagine a more confident version of me. What would me as an extrovert do? And then you, through pretending to be that thing and pretending to have that confidence, you kind of shape yourself and can kind of make yourself more extroverted and make it easier. Because really, we're kind of all playing roles, you know, like there's, you know, the way that you present yourself to others is in large part, you know, not exactly 100% a true representation of what's going on in your head. So if we're all already kind of playing these roles, teaching kids, like, it's like, if you play the role that you're confident and you're strong, you're going to be more confident and you're going to be more strong if you're playing that role.
Yeah, and it definitely, it goes back to, like, you know, how you talk to yourself matters. And whether, because you can lie to yourself about something that you're completely capable of doing as well. Like, you can convince yourself that you're not capable of doing something, but in reality you are. So I mean, it works both ways. So I think that it's kind of like rapping, when people adopt that persona of the rapper, like, that's not who they are, that's not the name on the birth certificate. Yeah. You know, that's just who they adopt when they're stepping in front of that microphone. So when you step in front of that barbell, you can adopt that persona of, like, oh, I'm about to lift this, I'm gonna crush it.
So we've kind of talked about, you know, like, what, you know, kind of working through mental toughness and just encountering challenges and having to use your reason and your, you know, ability to reflect to kind of make adjustments. So what areas of your life do you feel like, you know, all this time in sport and weightlifting has kind of, you know, carried over to things outside of the gym? Like, how do you feel like it's, you know, what impact has it had on, you know, D's life outside the gym?
Oddly, you know, if I go back from when I played rugby, it was a very party-like lifestyle. And, I mean, my teammates for the club team could easily say I wasn't the partier. I never liked drinking. I literally tried it a whole 7 times in my life. But, like, the pressures of being around them and being like, you know, I don't have to be here. Like, I know it's part of the culture, but I don't have to be here. So learning that, you know, even though each sport or activity has a culture, I don't have to be that.
Right.
And it was really, really hard to realize that I stand out sometimes among my peers, but I don't have to do what they're doing. So again, if everybody's going out drinking, like, it was really, really hard for me to be like, you don't have to like it, this is me. Because I'm not going to lie, like, I want to be likable, I want to be approachable, I want people to want to spend time around me. And when it gets to the point where they're just like, we're just going to stop inviting you because we already know you're going to say no. Whereas, like, now in life, people will keep inviting you even though you know they're going to say no. But it's just a common courtesy, because what if by that one time they say yes? So, like, that's a struggle for me to be like, it's okay to not do what they're doing. It's okay for me to do my own thing. If I want to go home and sleep, I'm going to go home and sleep. And to me, that's like a huge struggle. And, you know, to go from when you're younger, you can eat whatever the heck you want and it doesn't matter. And, like, now that I'm in my 30s, and granted, that's not very old, my body is starting to go, dude, quit it. And in my brain, I want to keep this high intensity of, like, when I was doing grid, I would love to keep hitting people like I did when I was playing rugby. And I have this, like, internal aggression that I'm sure not a lot of people, like, really know about. But, like, these are the things that I do to maintain that. And having other people not understand that is a struggle, because that's my life and you don't have to like it.
Yeah.
So changing my diet is, like, a huge mental struggle, because it turned from me feeling really depressed and angry to, like, if I don't want to feel that way, I have to eat this way. And that doesn't just go for my performance as an athlete, it also has an influence on my mood.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people go out to eat and I'm watching them eat, like, pizza and drinking beer, and we're over at Green Jeans and I'm watching everybody have, like, loaded cheese fries, and I'm like, no, I'm good, dude. Like, that's, to me, it's hard, because, like, I don't do drugs, I don't drink, I don't have a vice like normal people. My vice is to be a fat kid. Like, yeah, and I'm watching other people indulge on these things, and for me it's really hard to be like, no. And I'm crying on the inside, but I'm really happy on the outside. So to me, I feel like that's one of my biggest struggles of, like, going from weightlifter to teacher to being a friend to, is, like, food is a big drive for me. Yeah.
And food is, I mean, our culture really centers a lot around food. You know, we bond over food. We, you know, the way we eat affects how we live. You know, yeah. You were talking about meal prepping earlier. That's something that, you know, you probably implemented into your life, and not a lot of people do it. But that's something that you do on a consistent basis. So you don't have to face those challenges of like, oh, now what do I have to eat? I'm going to go stop by and get a burger from...
And I'm the kind of person that will feel guilty watching everybody else eat a donut. And I'm like, okay, I'll have one. And then afterwards I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. And I immediately have a crash and I'm like, I'm exhausted because I don't normally eat this. And like, again, that's hard for me.
You have, you know, over the last few years, we've put a lot of, you know, work into figuring out what kind of, you know, style of diet and that sort of thing like works really well for you. Because I know that had been a struggle on and off, is, you know, like, especially when they, you know, move the weight category to 90 and then drop it back to 87. So we've been having to like gain aggressively and then lose some and kind of figuring out where to sit. So what sort of things, like advice you would have for people trying to get their diet in order? Because it is really, it's hard to start. So like, what advice do you have for people like kind of just trying to, you know, improve body composition or start taking a little more charge of their nutrition?
Yeah. Well, if you are a super competitive athlete, like you find yourself going to AO finals and stuff, like, if you're going to play with your diet, do it during a time where you have plenty of time for no matter what outcome might happen. So, for instance, if you just competed at AO finals and your next big competition is not till nationals, like, as soon as you got home from AO finals, you're probably binging from Christmas and all that stuff. Like, after Christmas is the best time because you probably have, like, 2 months to kind of figure what may or may not work for you. And just be okay with the time it takes. Because anytime you make changes, most people tend to gain weight for like the first 2 weeks and then might see changes. So the first thing is make sure you have plenty of time to play with it. And the second thing I would probably say is obviously patience. I think that's probably one of my strongest points in my life, is just that I'm always patient with everything. And that's very, very hard, especially for this younger generation that are constantly used to having the immediate response or immediate feedback.
Yeah.
Whereas, especially dieting or exercise, you have to have patience. And don't expect it tomorrow. Don't expect it in 6 weeks. Don't expect it in a year. I mean, if I look at my pictures of when I first started with Grayson versus now, like, my max deadlift was 220 pounds. And to think that when I was getting ready for grid, I just did that for a double clean and jerk in 20 seconds, you know? It's like, it took me 8 years to get to where I'm at. It didn't take overnight. So patience is probably the biggest key if you're going to try to make some sort of change in your life, whether it comes to training, weightlifting, cardio, or diet. Like, patience. Yeah,
that's definitely true.
The long view is essential because nothing really happens in a month or two. You know, it's the consistency over the years. And especially when it comes to, you know, just, you know, muscular development and just like, you know, like when you look at somebody and you're like, damn, that person's huge. It took them a long time to kind of build those things up. And, you know, like the strength takes years to come on. And I think that patience is really, really important because it's so easy to, you know, so do you have a specific technique that you have when those feelings of why isn't this happening yet kind of come up? Do you have a specific routine that you go through to kind of like recenter yourself?
So I spend a lot of time, again, probably calorie counting, or not calorie counting, but like macro counting. And so over trial and error, like, again, 8 years ago when I first met Grayson, I was very easily depressed, and it took a couple people at the gym to sit me down and be like, okay, for these 2 weeks, all you're eating is vegetables. Okay, this 2 weeks, we're going to add some meat to it. This next 2 weeks, we're going to add some nuts to it. This next 2 weeks, we're going to add some fruit and bread. Oh my God, you started crashing there. So it took like 2 months of slowly adding things for me to find out what was kind of like making me depressed.
Yeah.
So then from there, I backtracked. Okay, we could take this out. Now let's start adding the next thing. And that's kind of how we found out, like, oh, me having more than 100 grams of carbs literally makes me emotionally break down. That's really unusual. Why would something like that happen? But because of that, it's like something, again, that took months for me to learn about myself after basically suffering from it for who knows how many years. So then, you know, if you can find that, let's start from the very basics and add from there. And when you find that something is messing you up, whether it's emotionally or physically making you gain weight, maybe remove some of it or all of it and then move on from there. And a lot of the things that I've probably tried are obviously things I've heard probably from Grayson, like trying the anabolic diet or trying a keto diet. Let's try the paleo diet. And yeah, I understand that a lot of these are fads, but because I was willing to try all of them was a way for me to find out what works and what doesn't work. So, but again, that goes along with patience. Like, oh, paleo didn't work for me because I was allowed to eat a ton of sweet potatoes and stuff, and that's what would make me crash. Or,
yeah,
you know, I do really well with low carb and high protein, but not necessarily high fat. Maybe it's somewhere in the middle. But again, it's those trial and errors and being patient. So that can be difficult for a lot of people to also have the knowledge for those things. Like, I can honestly say with all the time that I spent with Grayson has built a lot of knowledge. And I was like, man, where were you when I was in college? Because maybe it wouldn't have taken me 7 years. But at the same time, the fact that we've had the amount of time, again, 8 years worth of trial and error is the best way to find this out. So again, if you have the time, if you have the patience, and you have the knowledge. So I think the hardest part out of all that is probably educating yourself or finding those to help you educate. Be more humble about what you're trying to learn. So, you know, if you need help, ask for help. Don't ever hesitate to ask for that help. And sometimes you need those people to help motivate you. So when you, like you're saying, oh, if you don't have the results that you need in 2 weeks, you know, maybe you need someone like me or Grayson to be like, shut up, keep trying. You know, like depending, you know, sometimes it might be like, well, it's gonna take more than 2 weeks. Yeah. You're gonna have to just keep trying. And if it's really not working after a month or two, then we need to make the changes. So it goes back to having those patients and maybe having a support group and having someone help educate you or spending time educating yourself.
Yeah. Pursue that knowledge.
Right.
All right. You got anything else?
No, I really enjoyed this conversation, Dee. Thank you for coming on, and I appreciate your help at the gym with the other athletes, and then just, you know, watching you put in the work every day that I'm there when I see you lifting. It's always, you know, refreshing to me.
Yeah, I love being there. I can't really imagine having it any other way, so.
Well, Dee, thanks for coming on the podcast. We'll have to do it again sometime. Until next week, guys, happy lifting.
All right, y'all.